This is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to Frank Prattle. You're listening at KPOO 89.5 FM here in San Francisco, or you're also listening to WPS1 Art Radio, PS1 Contemporary Art Center at www.wps1.org. You might also be listening to the San Francisco Arts Commission website at www.sfacgallery.org or on the Frank Prattle website as well. Today, it is my extra special honor to have two fabulous guests, Coulter Jacobson, an artist here in San Francisco, and Leslie Shows, another artist here in San Francisco, who it happens to also be your birthday, Leslie. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Maybe you guys can start out just with a brief introduction of who you are and what it is that you do.
Me, I'm Coulter Jacobson. I'm an artist. I've kind of graduated to just being an artist, and that it's sort of different as opposed to being a caregiver, which is what I was doing a couple months ago. And maybe I should talk about my art. I don't
know. Sure, yeah. Give us a little brief rundown of what it is exactly that you do.
God, I don't even know what I do.
It's a common boat.
I do mostly drawing, and what I've been doing lately are these things I call memory drawings, where I draw from a photograph kind of as best I can, and then draw it a second time from memory. And most of my sources are usually found material or material that friends give me or things I just kind of find on the street.
Sounds good. We'll get back to that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Leslie, yourself, what flavor of art do you indulge in?
Flavor of art? The flavor of it, that's a good question. I use like a ton of different materials, like collage painting and all that stuff, to make kind of like landscapey, geological. I don't know. I kind of feel like a lot of them are actually just more like essays in painting form, like the really big ones, because it's mostly just like having a bunch of ideas and kind of out picturing that into like onto a canvas. That's how I would talk about it, like as the artist. But I guess objectively, like I would say, they're sort of landscape paintings turned inside out.
Sounds good. Now, both of you happen to be related in a certain way, and that's that you both show at a gallery here in San Francisco called Jack Hanley Gallery. No?
Yep.
That's right.
And maybe tell us a little bit about how you two first met.
Well, I think I met you through a Kevin Killian play. Is that true?
Yeah.
Who's here, Kevin, in the audience? It was called The Wishing Well, I think, right? And you were playing
an Andean geneticist.
Oh yeah, and I was a hipster from the Mission, I think.
Yeah.
Playing a hipster from the Mission. I'm not a hipster for now.
Now, come on.
That's how we first met, at one of the rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
And so, from that time, you both showed at Jack Hanley, both here in San Francisco and then abroad as well, no, Leslie?
Abroad.
In Los Angeles and elsewhere.
Yes. Yeah. Abroad the I-5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he has a franchise now, New York.
L.A.,
San Francisco.
Tulsa next, I hear. Tulsa's big on the market.
Tulsa, really?
Tulsa's blown up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, Coulter, to return to what you were talking about just a little bit earlier about your found photos, kind of the general theme of this conversation is one of public versus private and how that interacts not only in art practice but, you know, in real life, too. Mm-hmm. In your photographs, you say most of them are found photos or that they get given to you by random people, you know, mm-hmm. friends, etc. Do you have any selection process as to how you actually go about getting them?
Well, the first time I really started working with found photos was this project I was calling Woods and the Watchers, and my selection process for that was just looking through old, like, mail order gay catalogs or porn or the things in the back of porn, gay porn from the 60s and 70s. And I was looking for images of men wearing watches, because my idea was to do like a series of 24 of them, and that was kind of the only criteria, was that they'd be wearing watches. And I mean, that, I guess, would relate. It's like they were sort of private images in a sense that, and I, at the time I was, it's like when Friendster first, you know, started. So I was kind of thinking about how we're starting to relate to each other in different ways via Friendster.
How, I mean, have you had actual relationships of yours change because of it?
Because of the art or because of Friendster?
Because of Friendster, MySpace, you know, Facebook.
Oh, sure. I would imagine. Yeah, I mean, I've, you know, had a few dates through it that went really bad, and I don't do that anymore, but...
there was no success?
Well, I wouldn't... I mean, it depends on what you're...
Did you
calling
get laid?
Success. Oh, well, maybe. See, that's a whole other issue, is this becomes private, or this becomes public, this whole radio program, and it's been like a concern of mine lately, like what does get out into the world, and what becomes public versus what is private. It's especially with interviews, because I'm not so good at them, but
you're doing good though.
Oh, good.
You're doing good, don't worry.
But
you were talking about public versus private in relation to your found photographs.
Right. Yeah, as well. I don't remember what I was going where I was going with that.
Not a problem. For yourself though, Leslie, as well, do you have you been on Friendster, MySpace, Facebook, things like that?
I have made a visit or two to Friendster in my past, but and I actually joined MySpace to get a hold of one person that the only way I knew how was to join MySpace and friend him. So I have one friend on MySpace, and it's that guy. Denali, actually, you know him.
Denali Foley.
Yes, blast
indeed.
From the past. but I don't use them. I can't deal.
Yeah, there was a time when I was doing that project with the watches. I'd walk down the street and I felt like I got so into Friendster for these like 2 weeks that I felt like in the real world, if people looked at you, that meant they were clicking on you, and if they didn't look at you, then that means, you know,
no click. And then what happened? Did it continue?
I think that project for me was to meditate on it and just to kind of get back to something, or what's that snail mail? That's what a lot of those that's how people would meet, you know, for sexual, or not only sexual gratification, but so I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I learned from it exactly, but
did you eventually end up showing these though?
I had a show
in gallery space.
No, it was in my bedroom, another private
and
space.
So you invited people into your bedroom to come see them.
Mm-hmm.
The general public or just friends or what?
The general public. Yeah, I mean, a lot did come out of it that was kind of interesting, I suppose. Like they ended up getting posted on a website called Suspect Thoughts. Dodie Bellamy did it, and she put it up. And then my mom ended up seeing them. And that kind of was a whole new thing, you know, because they weren't really made for her to see, but then by her seeing them, a lot went on, but they were first, like, we, you know, didn't speak for a long time, and then...
Afterwards, you mean?
Yeah.
And what was your mother's initial reaction to it?
Horror, I would say. Yeah.
Why?
Well, she's pretty conservative. She's Mormon. She, you know, there's standards that she has, and
no watches.
Well, many of them were only wearing watches, so. Anyway, in that respect, it. I think I learned a lot, but she came around talking to me again, and it became really, I think, interesting. And for me, it's something that was kind of unexpected, you know. It was kind of, it all came back around. It went from something that's very private to something very public online and then back to something very private, being like a dialogue between my mom and I.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
As far as kind of continuing that theme and the image that, you know, both of you present to the public, Leslie, would you say that you have a different kind of persona as far as an artist that you present to people than who you truly are, like, you know, amongst friends or family?
I wouldn't say, like, with myself or my personality, but I think it's that's pretty relevant with, like, actual, like, my actual artwork. I think it's pretty relevant with my actual artwork more. I mean, I was thinking about, you know, what you were talking about, and I a lot of times have this feeling, like, after I put up a show, I have this, like, moment of horror where I feel like my entrails are on display for everyone to see, like, oh my God, what the heck did I just do? Like, I just completely put, like, I mean, it's a really vulnerable thing, because I won't say all artists, because I don't know, I'll speak for me, I'll just say, like, I have, like, personal reasons for, like, making decisions on my artwork and doing certain things, and it's not that I think people will discover them and I'll be exposed, but there is a feeling of exposure somehow when you put something...
When you put something in public, you know?
Yeah.
Have you ever had people, you know, react adversely to what you've put up? Had anyone ever come up and slapped you or, you know, cussed you out?
No, people usually do it in more indirect ways. You know, they, you know, write or say things, but that comes with the territory, you know, that's okay. That's the critique process. It's important. And it's not so much that anyone should fear critique. It's more the actual, like, it's just that moment of you know, exposing something that people didn't ask for necessarily.
Right.
That unsolicited offering of something.
So fairly recently, you had a show at the SF MoMA. We were part of the Sika show.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about your experience working with a large institution like that, and how many guts you spread out there. I mean, that's quite a few passerbys to be looking at the guts.
That was actually a really good experience. I had it easier than some of the other artists there because my work is pretty straightforward. You just hang it on the wall. And so I just came in and decided which order they go in, and I wasn't allowed to actually touch them, which is probably a good thing. Because I'm bad with stuff like that. But so they just hung them up, and you know, the general public, I feel like, is they come at art in a different way than, like, art professionals, and it was really cool to have, like, such a lot of general public people coming through and seeing it. You know, like, my family members who know nothing about art, or, like, I would, you know, whenever I went there for other things, I would always go up and see if, like, anyone was, like, making any, like, comments about it, and if I could overhear them, which I didn't hear that many. But even the critical comments were still different than the kind of, like, art critical comments, and I really enjoyed getting, like, different kinds of like, feedback or responses from people that weren't just... the kind I was used to, like, being in grad school and being so completely immersed in, like, art language and art criticism and stuff. It's pretty awesome.
Coulter, yourself, what about kind of an art personality? Do you think that you take on one of those that is different than, you know, maybe the relationship you and your mom or friends have?
That's a good question. I try to be real, as real as I can be. I mean, I don't think I'm trying to put on so much of a personality. But since I was talking, like, about my family, that there is, I think there's compromises between them that, you know, we've kind of worked out where I do act a little different towards them as I would in San Francisco, you know, so. So in that respect, I do kind of put on. So I don't. Yeah. I don't cuss as much.
But, and not so many dirty jokes with mom.
It's interesting, the question of what's being yourself and what's not, you know? Like, I feel a little less myself when I'm around my family, because I'm not used to being around them as much on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, it's like you second-guess what you say. I think that the context you're in makes your personality as much as something that is coming from you, you know? Like, I don't know if I think there's, like, a real you and a... Mm-hmm. Persona, you know, it's like all kind of persona in a way, but it's all kind of deeper you in a way.
Malleable.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think that a parallel between both of your guys' work that I've seen, and you know, tell me if I'm totally off base here, which I often am, so I won't take it personally, you know, is that you have kind of a deeper sense of spiritual aspect going on, and especially Leslie, when I look at your work, and Coulter, some of your more, I would say, landscape-ish works, mm-hmm. that they tend to have this, I wouldn't say amorphous feeling that you're reaching beyond into some kind of you know, I don't know, forest realm spiritual style thing, and maybe fantasy landscape would be a good word as well. Talk a little bit about that.
I hope this doesn't sound pretentious or something, but I definitely feel like there's a, like I have different like levels of meaning for me in the work that I make, and some of it's more kind of like esoteric, like it's sort of known to me, and it's not something that I assume anyone else would get unless I totally explained it. But like, for example, this painting I'm working on right now, I have these like, there's a lot of like reflection in pools going on, and like things being reflected, and I have these like pools they're just reflecting different types of sky, and I really feel like it's a lot about like the mind reflecting reality. I mean, I feel like there's this whole kind of like mind thing going on too that's, I don't know if I'd call it spiritual, but it's more like I feel like a lot with the new stuff I'm making is about like my relationship with reality itself, and in a way that like I'm just excited about in my life, and if someone were to look at it, they might get a feeling from it, you know, like, because, you know, that's in there, but they probably wouldn't be like, oh, those pools are like the mind reflecting the limitless space, you know, whatever. But I think hopefully not in an obvious way, but I think a sense of, you know, being or spirituality, if you want to call it that, is in there, especially more recently for me.
I think that kind of one of the things I was referencing, I believe I saw one of your paintings a while ago, and you had shredded up certain, I would say, alchemist texts, if I'm not mistaken, different, semi-religious or religious texts.
There weren't any religious texts specifically. There was Flatland, which is like a proto science fiction book. Those pieces were.
I thought there was. Wasn't there Aleister Crowley in there too, or am I wrong?
I don't know. There weren't.
Okay.
There weren't.
Because then you'll go to hell for that.
I want to avoid hell, so I haven't been using any of that stuff. You know, I think a long time ago I did some stuff, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, I did some stuff with some like kind of like occult-looking symbols that were on trees. That a lot of that had more to do with kind of like, I was also using corporate symbols, and there was this kind of like global power, like, you know, dark imperialist kind of thing going on. But the tech stuff that I was doing recently was more about using like 3 different books, putting them together in a geological formation. Because a book in itself is a kind of world unto itself. It's a system of knowledge, or in a moment of time, a novel is like a whole world unto itself. And taking these different kind of worlds, these disparate worlds, and kind of jamming them together was an interesting, I guess you could call it a metaphor for, or the geological kind of process of that was kind of a metaphor for these like worlds colliding and mixing in the way that reality so often does collide and mix together in ways that are surprising.
Coulter, yourself?
Well, I think I always start from different points, but of reference. But I think when it comes to like spirituality, it's also a word I think I've kind of shied away from, but have been thinking a lot more about lately. You know, being raised Mormon, sometimes it's like this. Like I wonder how I've compensated, or have I just sort of changed my systems of like belief and sort of kind of altered them to art making, and that's my new religion or not. But whatever. But I do. It's really like it starts with a meditation practice. I think it's just to really concentrate on like an image, and often the images. It's like a correspondence between me and usually something that's happening in my life, I would say, which is probably why I choose the image, which would be usually another person or, you know, a friend or whatever, loved one. And I think it starts from there, and it's a place for me to focus on that, and then it starts to kind of expand and multiply. And sometimes I do get sort of surprised, I think, by how it comes out, maybe, or you know, or how it might relate to the thing I started thinking about at the beginning, like I mean sometimes there are these sort of unexplainable I'm thinking particularly this one drawing. It was a drawing of a photograph that a friend took, Donald Mosier, and he took a photograph, of a painting that had glass over it. It was like a reproduction of a painting, and so the flash from his camera lit up. It was the ocean, and it's like the result was kind of a surprise. It's not what he expected, you know, and then so my drawing it, I think, and then doing a memory drawing of it, and then doing it a second time, it just became something else in addition to what he had made. And
creation unto itself.
Yeah, and for, I mean, his work is all kind of about ghosts and such, and so there's kind of this ghostly quality, and we dated for a while, and so that kind of all plays into, for me, it's, you know, it's a very personal thing, but it became something that I didn't really expect, if that makes sense. And yeah. It's kind of like the piece now looks back at me, because it's like these two eyes, sort of, and like, so I don't know if it's spiritual to me, but it definitely is like what I've put my mind towards and like meditated towards.
Sounds so good.
Yeah.
What's, in both of your guys' practices, how important are other people? I mean, if you had your druthers, would you be on an island by yourself with, you know, maybe a plantain or plantation rather full of food and, you know, liquor, whatever else you need, and
buffet,
good smorgasbord that you could eat and live, and, you know, maybe, I don't know, have some kind of sexual relations with somebody living there too, so you could have that need taken care of and pretty much just hang out by yourself? Or do you feel a need to be around other people?
I don't know who does. Actually, I do know people who don't feel the need to be around other people. I think a lot of them live in Alaska.
Denali Foley, actually.
Well, you're asking in our practices?
In your life and in your practice, intertwined?
I mean,
do you like other people?
Yes. I do like other people.
Your work tends to revolve around mostly non-figurative stuff, though.
Yeah. Well, there's so many different, I feel like there's so many different ways to answer that. Like, when I'm making my work, other people, there's like no, like, not working with other people at all. But I often find that when I have studio visits with people who come over, it's so amazing how someone else coming into my studio can bring, I mean, this doesn't happen with all people, but with like some people, like they'll just start talking or say something, and it's like it's like my work transforms before my eyes into something totally different and new, and like all these doors of possibility open. And I feel like it's this almost like weirdly a chemical thing when like another person comes in and sees something. It's like you can see it through their eyes. And I mean, some people come in and I feel like my work shuts down and is stupid. Mm-hmm. And it's not even necessarily that they said anything disparaging. It's like their vision is just, you know, so different, and it's just like it's like oil and water. And I'm like, what am I doing? This is weird. But it's amazing to me how much like just like that factor of another person can change everything.
One of my favorite things is when friends come to visit San Francisco, and I'd get to take them on, you know, the cable cars or something like that, and there does seem to be a completely renewed sense of joy and direction in the town you live, you know, doing simple, often stupid tourist things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Is it similar to that feeling, would you say?
It is similar to that feeling, although, I mean, I think with people in your studio, there's more of an exchange of ideas, and, like, sometimes the conversation itself is what, it's like, you know, you follow threads of conversation that open doors. It's not only seeing with new eyes the way it is when you have, like, your, you know, tourist friends in town, but it's also fresh ideas.
Colter, yourself?
Yes, I, too, love people. Like, I don't know if I would make art if it weren't for other people. I was working with, as a caregiver, I was working with this guy, and that kind of was a family. You know, there was like, we had a family network, and I think that kind of helped think about art, create art and stuff. So it's interesting now because I'm not working there anymore, and I'm finding that I'm kind of being faced with like what it is to be more of a loner in a studio, and that's just, I don't know, it's something I'm I don't think I've really come to terms with yet.
One of the things I think of is that when you look at somebody like maybe, you know, uber successful, like your Damien Hirst, or like even in the music world, like your, you know, your Elton Johns,
Jay-Z.
Jay-Z, somebody like that, that, you know, many people consider their earlier work to be very engaged with like a certain community, that, you know, that's when they were real, you know, something mm-hmm. along those lines. Mm-hmm. But then as they get more successful, they go out onto this kind of tether away from the world, and they just begin, you know, to kind of live in this esoteric castle out there, like making self-referential things that are really, you know, don't relate at all to, you know, what people are actually doing in 9-to-5 jobs, or, you know, any other thing like that. Do you guys feel that, you know, your practices will one day lead you away from the pack, and that you'll just be swirling around out there in the ocean?
Well, things change. I mean, families kind of change too. Like, that's what I'm noticing, I think, is nothing ever stays the same. It's like it. But I think new families are always forming, probably. But yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
It's kind of an interesting trajectory that, and I sometimes wonder if it's just totally unavoidable. It's like, you know, Elton John starts out and his life is a certain way, and he's like struggling and you know, attempting suicide, and then like his life goes on, he becomes famous, and then he becomes Sir Elton John, and like it's like the path is funneling him, you know? I mean, it's like, it's not like he changed, man, he got less real. It's like he's like walking this trajectory that has like its own kind of force and momentum, and it's like molding him and making him, you know, weird, or however he is.
I mean, the question then, I guess, kind of would lead to, like, does success eventually lead to kind of this weird alienation for everyone, or do you see people that are successful, you know, or really get to express their vision and stay kind of, you know, human in that way, you know, not so damn weird.
I mean, a lot of people get weird. I mean, there's...
Weird's not bad.
No, it's not.
But
it's
damn
not bad.
Weird can be bad.
Yeah. Losing touch with... I mean, if you have to have people doing everything for you, you know, I think you know, it's like good to cook your own dinner sometimes. I mean, I don't know how those people live, but... Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you guys both so very much. And you, maybe we can just give a brief rundown of shows you guys got coming up so people can hear and look out for you. Coulter, you had some stuff coming up, right? You have some stuff here right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Two pieces that just went up in the passenger show at Wattis.
The CCA Wattis here yeah. in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. And I'll have a show in London in April at Corvi Mora Gallery.
Sounds good. Leslie, yourself?
And I have a show coming up in April at Jack Hanley Gallery in New York.
Sounds good. And both of your guys' work can be seen on the web at jackhanley.com, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it .biz?
.com.
You're listening to Frank Prattle. My name is Jeffrey Thrall. My special guests today have been Coulter Jacobson, an artist here in San Francisco, and Leslie Shows, another fabulous artist as well here in San Francisco. You're listening at 89.5 KPOO in San Francisco and at WPS1 Art Radio, PS1 Contemporary Art Center at www.wps1.org or at the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery, which is graciously hosting us right now at www.sfacgallery.org and, of course, at frankprattle.com. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.